Warriors Bucks.
Welcome back to the Warriors Podcast. I'm Tim Roy. We have a couple of great guests for you on this show, including Trace Jackson Davis, the Warriors rookie center out of Indiana, who at the time of this taping in his last 10 games is averaging 11 points and 6 rebounds and 1.7 blocks in only 22 minutes of court time. All that while shooting 81% from the floor, 52 of 64, and granted a lot of his shots right around the rim. But we'll talk to Trace Jackson Davis about his adjustment to the NBA, what it's like to play with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and Chris Paul, and the chance for the Warriors to get some momentum before a play-in game. And later on the podcast, we'll talk with Jess Smith, who is now the president of the Golden State WNBA team, as she began her work on February the 14th after spending the last few years with the NWSL's Angel City Football Club, where she served as head of revenue since the team's inception in 2020. She is the first official employee of the Golden State WNBA team. We'll hear about that process and getting ready for 2025. But first off, I sat down with Trace Jackson Davis on the Warriors' recent road trip to find out a little bit more about the Warriors' rookie out of Indiana. Curry passes to Pajemski after the free throw, makes it 120-102. On the break, Kuminga lob. Jackson Davis gets the dunk, and this place is going crazy. The Warrior bench explodes, but a lot of red-shirted Indiana fans excited as well. 122-102.
So I asked you this question a while ago about, you know, Steve Kerr mentioning he's got to get you minutes, got to get you ready for the postseason. What does that do for you, and how much confidence does that give you?
It gives me a great deal of confidence. With Coach just believing in me, playing alongside some of the best players ever, you just want to go out there and perform. And every time I step on the court, I just play as hard as I can and let God take care of the rest.
What are you better at now than maybe you weren't as good at the beginning of the season?
I think just the biggest thing for me is just the pace and the timing and the defensive coverages. I think just getting that experience, having the game slow down, I think that's the biggest thing that has helped me throughout this year. And just getting more repetition and getting more reps is just, it's helped me slow down my game and then learn how some of the guys play and try to help them get open shots, help CP on the roll or defensive coverages and stuff of that nature.
When you talk about, you know, coming into the NBA, you had a pretty good idea you could play in this league, from judging from your comments last year at school and during the draft. But has there been a moment or a stretch of games where it validated all of that belief? Was there a point you said, yeah, I can do okay in this league?
Yeah, I think that just getting the repetition that I did or the games that I played in December, I think after that Toronto game and then definitely the Boston game, the first time we played Boston, I felt like that was the first time where I was really like, I belong here. I can definitely play in this league and play with some of the greats and help them and just try to continue playing like that ever since.
Do you think you surprise people with your ability to block shots, especially from behind?
Absolutely. I think that obviously, you think of shot blockers, you think of guys that are 7 foot, 7'2", 7'3", and just really long and lengthy guys. And I think where people don't understand me is how quickly I get off the ground. And I might be 6'9", but my wingspan is still 7'2", 7'3". And so getting off the ground and having a 40-inch vert helps with that.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Yeah, a little spring. The young legs help, too.
Exactly.
I think that's always a good thing. Let's get to shot blocking, though, because from what I've read in the past, the first couple of years at Indiana, you weren't required or asked to do a lot of shot blocking. What changed?
I think the biggest thing was just the play style. Coach Miller wanted me to box out on the weak side, and so that's what I did my first 2 years. I think I averaged like 30 or 40 blocks on the year, those 2 years roughly. And then my junior year, Coach Woody wanted me to go weak side and go block stuff, and so I think that helped a lot with my timing. But I think I jumped from like 30 blocks to 80, and then I had over 100 my senior year, and then I was the leading blocks at Indiana, and that was really only through 2 years. So I think if I would have been able to do that all 4 years, I would have probably got 400 or 500. So
do you think there's a psychological element to blocking a guy's shot?
Yeah, you just can't be afraid. You honestly, sometimes you'll get dunked on. That's all a part of it. But just trying to go up and get the ball, it's confidence. You got to just go up there and jump with them, and then you got to time it. And so I think the timing is the biggest part.
How sweet was your dunk over Victor Wembanyama?
It was a great dunk. Obviously, me and Loon talked about that before the game. He asked me if I was going to try to do it. I said if I got the opportunity, I would. But he's a great player. He's having a great year. And obviously, I think we play them here in a few weeks. So just got to go at him again.
I'm going to mention a couple of teammates. You give me your reaction and your thoughts on them. First of all, Draymond Green.
Draymond Green, it's energy. Energy and a great teammate. Obviously, he's someone that you want on your team, and you don't want anything to do with when you're playing against him.
Now, let's talk Steph Curry.
Steph Curry, also just a great leader and a great person. He's the head of the snake. It all starts with him, especially on the offensive end of the floor. We're trying to hunt him, get him going, and when he gets going, he's hard to stop.
When you were in practice, maybe at the start of the year, was there a moment where maybe you let him go, take a bomb, and then you thought, oh, wait a minute, I got to go out and get him?
No, there was one time in practice. I don't even think I was on the floor. I think I was watching, but he came down the court. He did like a behind the back, and then it went through someone's legs and then just threw it up at the rim. Cash, foul, and one. I was like, dude, what is this? This is not human, what he's doing right now. It was crazy.
Klay Thompson.
Klay is just sporadic. He's off in his own world, but he's also a great teammate. I feel like me and him have a synergy whenever we play together. He's always talking about, TJ, if they double out, I'm going to hit you on the roll, so be ready. So he's the one that gave me my first nickname. So,
fellow rookie Brandon Pajemski.
Confidence. That man does not lack any of it. He's someone that's going to go out there. He's going to be a dog on the court. He's not going to back down from anyone, and he's just going to – he plays with a chip on his shoulder.
And Jonathan Kuminga.
JK, he's the same. He's got confidence. I think his game is growing and growing, and I think that with how he's playing, the sky's the limit for him, and he's just going to continue to get better and better and better.
Trace Jackson Davis, my guest. I'm Tim Roy. Let's circle back to Indiana for a moment. How did Mike Woodson help you, and does he have that pro demeanor in a college setting?
Yes, he does. I think just the way that he's prepared me for the league, the things that he's done for me. Obviously, it wasn't all basketball related, but just my mindset, how I watch film, how I study the game, stuff of that nature. And then the offense that we ran through me, so giving me the keys to the offense defensively, being able to go block shots, being able to handle the ball, take the ball up the court, how to handle double teams, stuff of that nature, making the right play. And he's really helped with my basketball IQ and just growing my game from my junior and senior year. And I think those are all things that have benefited me a lot. I think defensive coverages, we run the same coverages that NBA or defenses run. Our offensive playbook, there's a lot of sets that we ran that are the same called sets that we run here with the Warriors. And so I think that's all just benefited me a lot and helped me being able to make this jump so quickly.
College has a lot of elements to it. What do you miss outside of basketball?
I think the biggest thing I miss about college is just being around my friends. Obviously, you only get to be a kid once, and then it's a job. And so I took all those 4 years, and I'm going to miss them. But at the same time, I felt like I was ready for this jump. But, yeah, I would say that the biggest thing for me is just being around my friends, going to see them, going out to eat, going to see the other games on campus, football games, volleyball games, stuff of that nature. But overall, it was a great experience.
Now, you grew up in a family where you had two dads, basically, mm-hmm. in your life, and you kind of keep in touch with both of them, from what I am led to believe. There's situations where you wouldn't mind just having one dad, but then on the other hand, you know, there are two people that have kind of helped shape you.
No, absolutely. They helped shape me in different ways. Obviously, I lived with my mom and Ray in Indiana, but Dale was always there trying to help me, give me pointers. And then when it started to get real and I started to get really good, then started listening to him a lot more and how he could help me. And so, but they both helped me a lot. So,
You got your dad's shoulders, though, that your Dale's shoulders.
Yeah, I think I got some of his genetics. That helped a lot, too.
Yeah, your dad was a tough customer in the NBA. We had Dale Davis for a few months with the Warriors. But let's talk about growing up. When you got to basketball maybe a little bit later than some kids, but when did you really start to fall in love with the game?
I started falling in love with the game probably my junior year of high school. I would say before that, it was just a hobby. Like, I remember 6th, 7th, 8th grade, I played on the B team. I wasn't even on, like, there was an A and B team. The B team played after the A team, and it was just, like, a game for, like, the lesser kids. And so I was there. And then get to my freshman year, I grew 6 inches, and I started varsity. And so I was like a baby deer, though, skinny kid, like, shot up 5 or 6 inches in that summer. So it took me a second for my body, for my brain to match my body. And so by my junior year, I was in the weight room practicing, going. My dad got me a trainer, and so I started taking the game seriously, and that's when I became a five-star and started getting offers to colleges. One Mr. Basketball for Indiana, McDonald's All-American, Jordan Brand Classic All-American, all that stuff, all those accolades in high school. And then I decided to go to Indiana.
College basketball is not as big in California, or at least in the Bay Area. Bay Area is a pro area. I shouldn't say all of California. Yeah. High school basketball is big, but it's not like Indiana. Can you describe what high school ball is like and the impact it has in Indiana?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, there's probably 9 or 10. I would probably say my sophomore year, there were 7 or 8 guys that were going high D1. And there was a kid named Romeo Langford.
Oh, yeah.
And Romeo was probably the best high school kid I've seen. I played against as well. And he was someone that literally every gym that he went to, it was sold out. Like, and Indiana, like, high school gyms, they're not like 2,000, 1,000. They're 5,000, 6,000, 10,000, 12,000 seats. So they would go play games. They would have to play at a gym called Seymour, which I think is like third or fourth biggest in the nation, and it's like 12,000 seats, and they'd sell it out every time that he was there to play. And just the impact that the Indiana fans, Indiana high school basketball fans, have on the basketball there, it's tradition. And it's like, we used to have a one class state tournament. Obviously they brought it to 4 classes, but they want to bring it back to where the littler schools can go up against the big dogs and the big schools. And it's just tradition out there, and they love their basketball.
Yeah, it had to be a great place to grow up and play hoop. You know, Ron Krejcik of the Chronicle wrote a great article about you, and it, you know, every kid has a couple of mishaps along the way. You know, I was in the emergency room with my kids at some point. Yours were a little more serious than most. You took it to a different level. But does that give you maybe a sense of, like, you know, I don't say destiny, I don't want to get corny about it, but a sense of appreciation?
Oh, absolutely. My mom always says that I'm God's gift. I have angels watching over me, and the Lord wants me here for a reason. And right now I'm playing basketball, just trying to do my best out there, make my family proud, make God proud, and then, yeah, just taking it one day at a time.
Two final questions. One, one of the things about college is when you're away from basketball, you have other things you got to do. You got class, you got other things going on. The NBA, not so much. You have time on your own. What's filling that time this year?
Well, since the season started, I've really just been sleeping, playing the game, talking to my friends, stuff of that nature. But I think after the season, when I'm not working out, I'm probably going to go and see the Bay a lot more. I know I want to go to a few baseball games I didn't get a chance to, and I want to go to some 49er games next year. So those are two things that are on my bucket list. But just trying to get to the Bay and get it more familiar. So, yeah, those are probably the biggest things.
And the final question, we're down to the home stretch here. How good can you guys be? What has to happen to be that good?
I feel like before Steph got hurt, we were clicking on all cylinders. And so there might be a little rust when Steph gets back, but at the same time, I feel like the sky's the limit for this team. We just got to continue to play together and play hard and take it one game at a time.
Trace, I appreciate the conversation. It's great to have you as a Golden State Warrior. We all love having you around, and best of luck.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
That is Trace Jackson Davis, and you can make the case that of all the players taken in the second round, nobody is giving their team more value than Trayce Jackson-Davis, and we look forward to seeing his development in years to come. There has always been a little bit of a basketball void in the Bay Area when you consider that the Bay Area has never had a WNBA team. There have been other pro leagues. In fact, Warriors owner Joe Lacob was one of the founding fathers of a professional league for women, but that league never really took off. However, the time is right to bring the WNBA to the Bay. The Warriors made that announcement earlier this year and made their first hire back in February. Jess Smith was hired as president of the Golden State WNBA team. They won't play until the summer of 2025, so there's plenty of time. But there's no doubt she's going to be one of the busiest people in the Bay Area over the next year and a half. Well, Jess, it's great to have you here. We're all excited about having the NBA in town, and when I heard the rumblings of the announcement, I said, it's about time. We need a team here for years, but it seems now the time's right because they're almost like the franchise is kind of riding this crest of a wave of not only the WNBA, but women's athletics as a whole.
That's exactly right. There's no better time than right now for the WNBA to be here in the Bay Area and to be a part of this arena. You know, we're sitting in it today. It's state of the art in what we're doing here. And on top of that, you have an incredible fan base to tap into, not only from the Warriors, but exactly to your point, women's athletics here in the Bay Area is next level. And that community, to be able to bring them into what we're building and make them a part of that, is a huge opportunity.
You know, one of the things that when you are around the sports franchise, and I'm a great example of this, I tell people this all the time, that you know, when you have great ownership, you know, everything kind of falls into place. When you don't have that, things don't go as well. And I've lived through both. So how much of your being attracted to this opportunity was the fact that the Warriors have Joe Lacob and Peter Guber and a talented ownership group?
I mean, it's everything. Twofold. One, I watched the announcement like everyone else, and Joe said we're going to win a championship in the first 5 years. And listen, I've worked in sports for almost 18 years. I don't have a ring yet. So getting a little jealous of everybody, certainly being in this building, everybody has a little more hardware than I do these days. So there is that piece of the puzzle. But in all seriousness, even before I was here, whether it's me or someone else, this ownership group is committed to winning and to doing it the right way. And part of what that means is facilities and some of the basic things that you don't always see in women's sports too. Like, we are having active conversations about renovations here at Chase Center. Oakland is going to be our home where the practice facility was for 4 years. We're going to be renovating, rebranding. I'm going to be building out an office and a staff there. They want to do this. They want to do it the right way. They understand that this is a different product, and sometimes it's going to be a different audience, and that's actually its power. And so to have the backing of the two of them and the entire ownership group is really something special. It does aid in the trust that this fan base and this area has, as well in everything that we're building.
Yeah, I think that's a great part of the vision, too, because the Bay Area is unique. You know, there's three major cities here, and they're all kind of grouped together, but they all kind of think of themselves as different. So having the practice facility in Oakland and playing games here, I think that's perfect. I think it's the right way to go. Were you surprised how quickly the phones were ringing for ticket sales?
No, to be quite honest. You know, I come from Angel City, where I just spent the last 4 years of my life building an organization from the ground up in women's sports and women's soccer. And I think for so long, the approach to women's sports has been how to not lose money, not how to make money, right? Like, well, if we sell 4,000 tickets, I hope that is okay, right? Versus, well, what if we sell 10? What if we sell out the building? And when you think of this ownership group, when you look at this arena, what that showed to me is the immediate trust. All they were saying is, hey, we're bringing a team here. People said, cool, I want to be a part of that, right? Everything else is upside. We're now close to 5,000 seat deposits. And I joke that the only thing we've really done since then is hire me, and I'm not that interesting. But there's so much more to come. We're deep in conversations with GMs right now. We are thinking about the brand identity of the team and what that means and how people can relate to that. Those are going to be some pivotal moments for us, and we can't wait to see where that deposit number goes.
So if people want to buy tickets right now and get on the train, if you will, how do they go about doing that?
Yes, great question. Thank you for asking. WNBA.com/Golden State. Head there. Seat deposits are $25. You can select where you want to sit. and we will be going through that process at some point this summer.
My partner, Tom Tolbert, mentioned that he thinks Valkyries would be the great name of the franchise going with the warrior motif. Is there a committee or are people sending you emails and texts suggesting what name the team should be?
People will find you. That is what I've learned, right? I have a very public account.
Especially if you owe them money, they'll find you. Yeah,
I mean, that too, right? But in this case, I think the most fun thing is if you look at any – we have WNBA Golden State accounts on social media. Instagram and Twitter are probably the most active. And what you're seeing are so many comments every time we post something, what people think the team name should be, right? So there's definitely suggestions rolling in. There was some surveying done early days about that too. So we hear the suggestion. It's on the list and we're working on it.
How do you keep from being, and we're talking with Jess Smith, who of course is heading up the Warriors WNBA team. I don't know if that's officially the way I should say that, but you're part of the Warrior family now.
Thank you.
And to me, when I thought about your job, I thought I would be overwhelmed with, like, what to do next, because there's everything to do. How do you keep from getting overwhelmed in this? And do you have a list of things and dates you want to accomplish them by?
I mean, yes, I'm overwhelmed. But that's also the fun part, to be quite honest. I don't know if that's just a problem with me as a human that I keep taking on projects that do this. But I have two small children, so I feel like I can do anything if I've survived, you know, having a 4- and 2-year-old. Absolutely. You know, I think the biggest thing when you're starting something new is always prioritization and thinking through what needs to come first. Listen, we need to get this brand right, and we need to share it with the world in a really big way. So that is taking up a lot of my time. But to do that, I also need to hire some human beings to help me do that too. So building out the org structure and inviting some other folks on our team to do that. And certainly, you know, you heard Joe, the sporting side is huge. So getting that GM, getting them here, getting them right, allowing them to start building that culture from a sporting side and attracting the right talent is definitely a top priority for everybody too.
Because if people don't know, you have to hire coaches, GMs, and they have to all go out and scout, not only scouting college players, they have to scout WNBA players, because you guys are going to have an expansion draft where you can pick from a pool of players to make up the roster.
Yeah, and free agency.
Yep.
This is going to be quite a free agency market to watch. You're going to see a lot of single year deals coming out that could create something really interesting for us as we're coming on the market. So free agency, as soon as this 2024 WNBA season ends, run the clock, right? Like, who's in the market? Who are we going after? Then you've got expansion draft. Then you've got college draft. I mean, the talent coming out of the college, you know, platform right now for years to come is transformative, right? Like, when we're really thinking about it, and the fandom that already exists around their individual brands coming into the league with the athletes that have those brands, it's spectacular.
You know, one of the coolest things I think that's happened for basketball in this country, professional basketball, was Steph versus Sabrina. And, of course, she's a Bay Area kid. And you have Tara Vandeveer, one of the best coaches in any sport anywhere. Her track record is without, you know, comparison. How much of an advantage do you have in building your brand in an area that has produced so many great women players and is in tune with women's basketball?
Yeah, I happen to be courtside with Joe for Steph and Sabrina, and it was epic. Right? Like, I mean.
So now I'm jealous.
I mean, you should be. I'm not even going to lie. It was one of the coolest things that I've ever done in my entire life. And to see, like, to hear the crowd, to know what that moment meant to so many, to watch them both perform at that level, one great against the other great, it was unbelievable. And I think the biggest thing was that feeling that you got in watching both of them and what that means is exactly what we're trying to build here, right? You have an incredible respect between both sides and between our WNBA team and the Warriors. Like, we expect to build the same thing.
And you're going to have Stephen Curry at a lot of your games. Because, you know, he's such a great backer of the underdog. He's such a great backer of acceptance and inclusion. And it certainly, as the father of daughters, he loves bringing women's attention to the forefront. I mean, he's going to be at every game.
Yeah, I sure hope so.
Well, unless he's playing golf somewhere, then
yes.
He will, you know.
Yes, he might have some other things to do.
Yeah,
in the meantime. Yeah. But we would love to have him and the family for as many games as they would like to be at.
So you've got a name to pick. You have colors to assign. You have a lot of different things to do, people to hire. When are you going to? And you have two young children. Congratulations on that. And it's the best job in the world, by the way. But
You know, when are you going to have time to get all this done? When are you going to sleep?
What's that? You know, I think having small children prepared me perfectly.
Yes.
What's a full night of sleep? No, in all seriousness, this organization, this ownership group, like everyone is coming together to make this happen. This is a priority for everyone involved. So even though I came in and employee number one, we are building behind the scenes and have been for quite some time before I got here. So we're ready, and it's not going to slow down anytime soon. But if I've learned anything in building a brand, it's not like you launch the brand and it slows down from there, right? There's season one, there's season two, you know, so there's more and more to come.
And like you said at the beginning, one thing I've learned in the years that this team has been under the leadership of Jill Acob and Peter Goober is that they do everything first class, and I think you're in a great spot. We're very excited to have you. And it's just going to be fun. I can't wait for it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be pretty, pretty amazing. And I can't wait to come back and share more details or send more folks like a GM to come talk to you once they're here.
I would love that. We would love to have them come by. Jess, thank you so much for the conversation. I would wish you best of luck, but I know you're going to get this done and get it done the right way. And again, congratulations on the job. And I know I speak for everybody in the organization. We're just thrilled to have you here.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
My thanks to Jess Smith, the new president of the Golden State WNBA team. Hope you enjoyed that back and forth here on the Warrior Podcast. And we have a special bonus. We have a bonus coverage. That's right. Bonus coverage on the podcast. Because when the Warriors knocked off the Memphis Grizzlies on Warriors Radio, our postgame guest was Klay Thompson, who had a fabulous game and continues to excel in his role coming off the bench. But we had a fun conversation, including, quite possibly, the last trash talk of Pac-12 basketball.
Klay Thompson's coming over. I think he's going to get our headset on. See if he can hear us right now. Klay, you got the headset. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Congratulations on the win. I know you guys needed this. What were you guys talking about beforehand, what you wanted to do to get the lead and to win this game?
We just talked about our competitive nature, and I mean, at this point, every game is so important. They're all important, but with playoffs looming, we know what is at stake. So just a great win. Give credit to Jonathan Kuminga. That defensive intensity he brought in the second quarter to end it was what pushed us over the hump.
You know, you watch, you know, your development coming off the bench has been huge for Golden State, but it's got to be a little exciting for you watching some of these young guys like Kuminga, like Jackson Davis and Pajemski, you know, with their growth. What do you see there?
I mean, just great players, future. You know, they have a long futures in the league. I mean, BP does all the little things. He's leading the league in charges for that's why we love him. He's hustle and the numbers that don't show up on the box score. Then with Jonathan, I mean, sky's the limit for that young man. You saw his explosiveness. I mean, how many dunks did he have tonight where his head was at the rim? He gives us a whole new dimension to our offense and our defense with the intensity he brought tonight on the ball.
Hey, Klay, after the way you guys started the Knicks game, how important was just the focus aspect of what you guys were trying to do to start this game?
Ooh, it's a good question, Tom. I say we came out a little flat. I mean, so people have to understand, like, it's hard to bring playoff intensity 48 minutes every regular season game, mm-hmm. but we picked it up. And I give Jonathan, Andrew, and Draymond incredible so much credit because they really played the passing lane so well. They forced turnovers, and when we get out of transition, get a couple easy buckets, and that's when our perimeter shots seem to open up.
No, you're right. I thought Kuminga was so important tonight because he was getting downhill. And when he gets downhill instead of settling, it just that type of energy just is infectious. And it collapses the defense. And you're right. It opens stuff up for you guys on the perimeter.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it makes everybody's life easier. When Jonathan is getting to the rim, when he gets ahead of steam, he's almost impossible to stop. He's playing within himself much better, taking great looks, and sky's the limit for Jonathan, man. What an incredible talent.
Look, you're one of the greatest shooters of all time. You're a Hall of Famer,
thanks,
all that stuff.
Keep it coming.
But do you ever look and go and watch Kuminga and go, God, I wish I could do that just one time?
Hey, man, I had a little bounce back in my day.
Not that bounce. You didn't have not even off a trampoline you had that bounce.
Oh, come on. No. I caught some bodies.
Oh, wow.
Not as many as him, but geez. I have more bounce than you, Tom. I bet you that.
Oh, you're setting the bar really high, Clash.
Oh,
way to set that bar high.
We got the last shots fired in the Pac-12
right here. That's
right.
No Cougs, baby. We swept the Wildcats this year.
They're still in the Pac-10. What, are you kidding me?
Yeah, you guys left us. Have fun in Kansas.
Right,
I'm out of here.
Hey, all right, Clay. Oh, 137 to 116, the final. Warriors get the win. God. Oh, that was beautiful. That was just beautiful.
Oh, he's a beauty.
Oh, great stuff. Well, I hope you enjoyed that with Clay Thompson and Tom Tolbert. Yours truly, Tim Roy, on Warriors Radio. You can always check us out on Warriors Radio, 95.7 The Game, our flagship station in the Bay Area. Besides Tim Roy, thanking Jess Smith, the new president of the Golden State WNBA team, Clay Thompson for coming on our post-game show, and, of course, Trace Jackson Davis. As we head toward the play-in bracket, we'll have more on the Warriors podcast. I'm Tim Roy, thanking our producer, R.C. Davis, who handles all things audio in the Golden State universe. And once again, thanks for checking us out on the Warriors podcast.